Hello there. Welcome to this episode of Force Ghost Conversations. This is your host, Anthony King, and this week, along with special guest Dan Zare from Coffee with Kenobi, we're going to take a deep dive look into Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Before we get started, I'm inviting you to join the conversation with us. We can be found on Twitter and Hive at Force Ghost Pod. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok just by searching Force Ghost Conversations. Also, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on your listening site of choice. Plus, Force Ghost Conversations is live on Patreon. If you're a fan of the podcast and would like to consider pledging your support, there will be a link in the episode description for you to check out the various tiers offered. Finally, please be sure to check out our Tee Public store to buy some Force Ghost Conversations merchandise. And without further ado, it's time to gather around the campfire for some Force Ghost Conversations. All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast, and I am really excited to dive into all that is Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny with one of the biggest Indiana Jones fans I know. Yes, Dan Z from Coffee with Kenobi is back on the show today. We're going to be taking some, you know, hard-hitting questions about what does Destiny mean? You know, what do we think about the satisfaction of the story, right? Does it make sense? Does it play off of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Well, we're going to get into all of those big questions and really just analyze this film from multiple perspectives and viewpoints as we are enjoying what I'm dubbing now the Summer of Indiana Jones. Yes, we've been talking all Indiana Jones this summer, and I believe we'll be continuing to do so all the way up until Ahsoka pretty much here. So get ready for a lot more indie content coming your way here on Force Ghost Conversations. And of course, that's where I'm going to start with Cloud City Gossip here, because we've got to hit to some of the news as we usually do before we get into our main topic of discussion here. So, of course, go see Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. It is still out in theaters. Most theaters are still playing it. I saw it for the third time recently, and my theater was packed. So that's a great sign that people are still going out and seeing this movie. Perhaps you didn't see it opening weekend. Perhaps you didn't see it the second weekend. Perhaps not even the third weekend. But you can still check out Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny while it is still in the theaters. Trust me, the cinematic experience that is this movie cannot be missed. It's just a wonderful time in the theater. It's a great movie to have a bucket of popcorn with and a large soda and just enjoy yourself and get lost within this adventure and to learn the great themes that come across this movie as well. So, of course, we're going to talk about all that with Dan on the other side of this portion here. But just as a forewarner, we're going to be doing full spoilers into Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So, again, if you haven't seen it yet, I mean, come on now. Pause this episode. Go back and go and watch the movie and then come back to this point in time, or even go check out our other episodes, right? Because we have been doing the rounds on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny up to this point, and we're going to be continuing talking about this movie. So you want to be caught up with everything that we've got going on here. So absolutely go watch the movie while it's still in theaters. Trust me, you won't regret it. Also, currently, at the time of this recording, San Diego Comic-Con is going on. And although I will recap basically all the information that's coming out from that next week, to make sure that everything is covered in one succinct manner, because I know they're supposed to be talking about Star Wars Outlaws a little bit in the convention. The publishing panel happened, I believe, on Friday, which they revealed some covers for some upcoming books and comic work, especially with the Phase 3 of the High Republic. So we'll definitely be talking about those. I'm going to be posting some of those pictures to our social media feeds over the next couple of days so that you're all kind of in the know about what's going on here. But we're definitely going to keep a close eye out on San Diego Comic-Con, especially Star Wars' role in it, because they actually have a little bit of an Ahsoka display with some costumes for the cast of that series on display there. Hasbro also unveiled some new figures, especially for Return of the Jedi 40th, but particularly they're going to do a crowdfunding campaign for the HasLab Pulse series, I believe, which is for the Ghost. So I believe that's like $450. So if you want to back that, be sure to check out Hasbro and their websites to make sure that you can support that and make sure that it comes to life in a wonderful way, because that looked great. I saw the prototype of it. Man, did that look excellent. So if you're a fan of Star Wars Rebels, and perhaps maybe we see it in Ahsoka in some live action sense, because you know they have the scan of it from Rogue One and from Rise of Skywalker, so they can certainly have it come to play in real life. And of course, they probably utilize some modeling, you know, because that's very much appropriate for the Mandalorian, Ahsoka, Book of Boba Fett world. Hey, that's awesome. So if you want to look into all that, be sure to check out Hasbro. I think maybe StarWars.com also has a little bit of a link to it as well, but you don't want to miss out on that if you're a fan. And that's how the model works, is you have to back it, and if enough people back it, then they will produce it. So be sure to support if you're interested. Also, in this past week, Star Wars Inquisitor Rise of the Red Blade was released. This, of course, is a new canon novel written by Delilah S. Dawson, and it is receiving great reviews from the Star Wars fandom this past week. A lot of people are just raving about it, saying it's probably one of their favorite, and if not the best, Star Wars canon story that's come out recently. So that's high praise, in my opinion. So if you're interested in that story, which I'm hopefully going to be checking out pretty soon here, maybe one day, maybe, you know, I don't put a date on it or anything like that because of grad school ending and things happening behind the scenes here, you know, I'll get to it when I can, but I'm definitely looking forward to reading that when I am able, and I think you should too. So be sure to check out that book. And that's all that I had for this week in the Cloud City Gossip segment. So of course, on the other side of this very short break, we'll be back with Dan Z to talk all things Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Stay tuned. Okay, everyone, welcome back to another installment of Force Ghost Conversations. And I don't know about you all, but this is just an exciting time to be a fan of Indiana Jones. It is really indie summer, if you can, you know, follow my meaning here. And of course, with a new film release, I just don't want to be talking about it all by myself here. So I am so thrilled to welcome back to the show our friend Dan Zer, host of Coffee with Kenobi, and I'm going to say this, one of the biggest indie fans I know. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Hey, I will graciously accept that moniker. Thank you so much, Anthony. It's awesome to be back on the show. I've been very much looking forward to talking about a brand new Indiana Jones film starring Harrison Ford. I mean, what could be better?
What could be better? Exactly. Another installment with Harrison Ford, perhaps? But, you know, I will certainly take what we got. Yes. Full disclosure, I love this movie. But I actually want to start with your indie journey. I actually have no idea what your history with indie is like, to be honest here. I know when I was on Coffee with Kenobi a few weeks ago now to talk about Raiders, I shared my story for how I came to know and appreciate and love this franchise. But yeah, I was wondering if you could just share your journey with indie over the last, you know, 40 years of this franchise. What were your first memories of the movies, maybe seeing Raiders for the first time, maybe, you know, just seeing Indy and just saying like, wow, is that Harris? Is that Han Solo? No, this is Indiana Jones. This is a different guy.
I love saying the story. It always is a goosebump moment. So I'll see if it will happen again. But I remember going to the Muppet movie in theaters.
Oh, nice.
And pretty neat in and of itself. And before, of course, it were trailers. And there was a trailer for a movie from the creators of Star Wars and Jaws and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And I thought, okay, I love George Lucas, but Steven Spielberg makes me nervous because he makes scary stuff. So, you know, Raiders came out in 81. So I was like 8, 9 years old. And I didn't really know what to think. I remember thinking the trailer was a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
And then one day my dad came home. We had some friends from out of town and he said, hey, we're going to go see that new movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I was like, oh, okay, we're going to go see it. And I wasn't sure what to think, but then my dad said, hey, it's got Han Solo in it. And I was like, whoa. Okay. And I don't think I realized that when I saw the trailer. I'm like, all right, now I'm interested. Now I'm excited. So we went and the opening sequence happens and Indy whips the pistol out of the guy's hands. And I remember looking at my brother saying, Han Solo has a whip. And yes, mission accomplishments, I have goosebumps again because
yeah.
That was so, and I was, from that moment on, he's been my favorite fictional character that doesn't involve a spider. I mean, I just, I love Indiana Jones. I saw that movie so many times. I still have the Betamax copy of it, for crying out loud. The only thing that I have, it doesn't rival my Star Wars collection, but I have a pretty nice Indiana Jones collection. And every time these movies come out, I get excited. When Crystal Skull came out, it was my second or third year of teaching. And I remember getting online and buying a Harrison Ford autograph, thinking that was such a cool thing. And I got online because I was on all these Indiana Jones costuming message boards. And I want to get a really cool fedora. And I found this guy in the UK who originally created the pattern for the jacket that Harrison wore in Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I emailed him and he said, I will make you one. So I sent him over my measurements and he made me out of the same material, same pattern, but for me, a Raiders of the Lost Ark Indiana Jones jacket, which I have.
Oh my gosh.
He put a shirt in there and pants. I got online and found the Alden boot, which is the boot that Harrison Ford wears in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Ordered those from a company in San Francisco. I got a couple of fedoras. I got a whip. I got the World War I gas mask bag from a place called Todd's Costumes. I got the holster. I got the belt. Got everything, man. And then I remember going to a Halloween party and someone legitimately said to me, are you supposed to be a lion tamer? And I thought, I mean, what a great, that's what they, what Willie Scott says, I mean, in Temple of Doom, right?
Yeah.
How funny. How funny. and so I loved it. And then, of course, the new movie came out. And I was excited about it for such a long time. And I was really, the day of the movie, I was excited and nervous. I actually got invited to go to the premiere of The Dial of Destiny in Hollywood. And I had to turn it down because I was on the Halcyon. So this is a good problem to have, right? But yes, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark is my favorite movie. Harrison Ford is, of course, my favorite person. I was fortunate enough to meet him at the Rise of Skywalker premiere and talked to him about my love of Indiana Jones, which was a really incredibly blessed moment. But yes, you could say I'm a big fan.
Oh my gosh. What a great story here. I mean, the Betamax alone would just be enough to just like cement yourself as a true indie, not just a fan appreciator, but I'm going to say scholar at this point. You're a true scholar of this franchise, also with your academic background as well in this matter. But man, to even just meet Harrison Ford too, and I know you have that wonderful story of like sharing your experience and telling him that you're an educator and all that.
Yes.
Man, what a great story. And I just love how just from humble beginnings, right, you're just like, I'll go see this movie. And then I can just imagine, you know, 8-9-year-old Dan Zare just sitting in that cinema and just mind being blown as the scenes just unfolding in front of you.
Closing my eyes during the face melting and all these things. And now I'm sitting there eating popcorn while it's, you know, it's great.
Oh my gosh. Well, I want to shift now to your experience with this new movie, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And, you know, we're big fans of the theater going experience here at Force Ghost Conversation. So that's where I want to start our conversation about this movie today is, what was your theater going experience like for the first time you saw this installment of the franchise?
So I took my son. I went with Tom Gross, who joins me a lot on Coffee with Kenobi and is the host of our Patreon show, CWK Prover. And I went with my best friend, Scott, and his son, Alex. And we went the first showing on June 29th. It was like a 2:00 show. And we sat right in the middle, you know, in the center, about 15, you know, rows from the screen. And the movie started and I was super low key the entire time. In fact, so much so that a couple hours before I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to see an Indiana Jones movie. And I underplayed it in my mind so much because after seeing Phantom Menace and The Force Awakens, I my hype was so ridiculously high that nothing could have met it. And then I saw it again and I felt much better about it. And then as soon as the movie started, I was like, oh my gosh. And I realized how insanely nervous I was, which sounds silly, but you know what I mean.
Oh, totally.
And so then it happened and I was just completely hooked. And then it was over. And by the way, Mason and I did wear fedoras and our bags. And
as you should, yes.
Mason brought a whip that Hasbro was kind enough to send us. And Yeah, and boom, and then we purposely, as was our tradition, didn't say anything about it until we got on the mic hours later and discussed the film itself.
Great, great. So first impressions, yay, nay?
You see how I've been just dangling that hook.
Yes, yes.
So what I do on the show is I give one word to describe my overall reactions. My overall word for the movie was conflicted.
Conflicted? Interesting. Yes.
I like this movie a lot. I've still only seen it one time.
All right.
Right. And I honestly tried to see it again before I got to come on Force Ghost Conversations. I just wasn't able to make it work. I think the challenge with this movie is that it legitimately takes a very adult approach to a very, quite honestly, and I mean this with all the love in my heart, a very cartoon action hero. I mean, he's a cartoon character.
Absolutely.
He's sophisticated. Yeah. He's smart. He's got all the wonderful things. But I don't know if I was ready to see an Indiana Jones, an older Indiana Jones that had given up on himself. Because this entire movie, it says it's Dial of Destiny, but it's really the search for Indiana Jones to find his own inner spark again.
Yeah.
And it sprinkles out throughout with, you know, his grief over losing his son, and then the slow de-evolution of his marriage and losing his wife. He's teaching, and you can tell he doesn't have that spark, which I don't have that, but I could but I can imagine that.
Yeah.
And then like the violence, the level of violence, this is very different because it's not cartoon violence. There's like innocents that are killed and you see him affected by people being murdered. Like, you know, like the ship captain played by Antonio Banderas.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the ending with the back in time situation was a cool idea. It didn't really work for me.
Okay.
Because I mean, let's not be silly. I mean, this is everything that's happened in these films, you know, jumping out of airplanes with a life raft and, surviving, you know, he would have died 10 minutes into Raiders of the Lost Ark. Probably.
Totally.
you know, all the things have happened. I'm not going to play the realism card because we're talking about Indiana Jones here. But I guess in my mind, I just thought, I don't know. I just wanted to see Harrison get his mojo back earlier. But that wasn't what the story was about. It was really about a vulnerability and aging. And then at the end, I like the symbolism. I hope I'm not taking the whole show by just babbling right now. at the end, when he grabs the hat, because because Sala and Marion say, "Are you back?"
Yeah.
And he gets that hat and he is back.
He's back.
But it takes his family to get him there. I think it's so beautiful. And I really like, I think it's quite profound. I'm still not 100% sure that I was ready to see that side of a hero that we've never seen anything like in any iteration. Again, that being said, I applaud the idea and I can't wait to see it again, but it was hard for me. Quite honestly.
No, I totally, like, I understand, like, you spoke a little bit first there about that initial trepidation, like a fear, an anxiousness heading into a new movie, because I get that a lot for Star Wars movies. Like, it's always that, like, I have this, like, split-second feeling of, like, everything I knew before is going to change now because this new installment is now part of the franchise. So, like, my preconceived notions of what, you know, this character's motivations are, or what I conceive to be like the overarching theme of this story, could potentially change in 2 hours here. Yes. I vividly remember that experience with The Force Awakens, because I was like, okay, first time George is not necessarily involved here. Are they even going to do a crawl? Are they going to, like, I remember once, you know, like the opening sequence is done and, you know, they're off on Jakku doing the adventure. I was like, I vividly remember just like, relaxing in my seat. I was like, okay, I trust them now. It's all good. We're safe here. And I totally get that. I mean, I definitely had a little bit of that with this film, because I knew that the opening sequence was going to be the de-aging process. And I was like, so much this film rests on if this works or not.
Right.
So we're going to talk about that in a little bit here, but I wanted to also share with you my first time experience with
this. Please.
So I mentioned I'm a big fan of the movie theater experience, but I'm also a fan of some experiential experiences in seeing movies too, and trying to resurrect some old ways to watch and enjoy movies. So I grew up in central Pennsylvania before moving to the DC area where I'm currently at, and in which is about a two and a half hour drive from where I'm at currently. And where I was growing up, there was actually a drive-in movie theater that still exists and operates to this day. And I thought, man, what a great time to see my first Indiana Jones film in the cinema in it during its theatrical run than to see it on a drive-in screen, right? To have that experience of, like, you know, going out, getting snacks and just sitting in the car, enjoying it, this great action adventure serial that is largely based in the 80s. And I know drive-ins were very popular in the 80s and all that. So I thought, yeah, let's do this. And the entire day, it had kind of been threatening that it may be raining. It didn't rain at all until literally the Lucasfilm logo started popping up. And man, all I could do was almost hear the movie, but it poured the entire time. We had to keep the windows up, and you just can't have the car on, so everything's fogging up inside the car too. So I'm really looking at this movie through like a fogged window screen, but also the rain droplets that are coming on it. So it was like watching the movie through a filter. So my first experience was a little muddled. And of course it's hot in the car. It's like 90 degrees outside and I'm just like sticking to my seat. And then I had a 2 hour plus car ride home in the rain after this too. So just, I knew this was coming and I was like, man, of course I had to wait till the last minute for it to rain like this.
Oh no.
So that was my first experience. And of course I go on the Colby cast the next day with our friend Colby to discuss Dial of Destiny. And I was just like, hey, just letting you know, I may not actually know a whole lot about this movie. But we had a great time talking about it. We talked almost 2 hours about the movie somehow, even through the, you know, the very minimal lens that I was able to see it through. The next day, actually a couple days later on July 4th, I go see it again for the first, basically for the first time,
right,
in the true proper theatrical experience. And man, did I just fall in love with the movie then. I think I said it in the CWK Cafe that I'm enraptured with this movie. I don't know why it's hooked me. It's grabbed me so much. And I just,
tell me why. I would like to learn through your
eyes. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, I was expecting, I don't know why, but I think I was maybe expecting them to do something vastly different from what we had seen before. So I would think I was expecting Harrison to be a bit more of the grump, if you will, perhaps lost his way. I think in the second viewing, because I of course knew all the plot beats and stuff like that. So I was able to really just like hone in on specific character moments and beats. And I was really just getting enthralled with these side characters of this movie, right? Helena, I think, was such a big standout for me that really moved this plot along.
Yes.
And I think at the end of the day, of course, full spoiler, and we've been talking spoilers all the way through here, so right, apologies to anybody if you haven't seen it yet, but you know, we're a couple weeks into this. If you haven't seen it yet, you're not going to. So I think for me, I loved at the end of this movie, that was really the big driving point for me, where he is like, yeah, just let me stay here. I want to stay here. Let me watch this thing that I've been a part of or studying and like dreaming about my entire life, the Siege of Syracuse here. And the fact that, you know, I feel like in the cinema in the last 5 to 10 years or something like that, anytime these like resurrected legacy characters come back into the fray, they kill them off. And I was like, oh no, am I going to see Indy die? Actually, like I just, my heart sank when the possibility of that. And the fact that Helena's like, I'm sorry, I have to do this too. And then punches him to take him back to his time. Like, finally, a realist in one of these movies that isn't just like, you know, bound to this person that there's their, like their elder, their superior family member, just to be like, all right, I will respect your wishes and let, and we'll move on. And that's the end of Indiana Jones. No, there's still more to the story that I think I was so thrilled to like have my head canned and go off. Like, to me, the story doesn't end with just him grabbing the hat here, right? My brain is going off in 1,000 different directions of where the story goes next. And I'm happy that maybe we don't get that, because now I can play with my action figures again and have that fun experience of determining what the next story is for myself. So I think that's a little bit here. We'll get into a lot more of the nitty gritty details perhaps in this episode and talk more about all that stuff. But I think that's where my brain is at right now.
And I love it. That's cool.
So I'm a big fan of talking about titles here. Mm-hmm. And I think for our specific skill sets, we like to dive deep into the analytics of what words actually mean. Mm-hmm. And I first off, I love the title Dial of Destiny. I think that just rocks overall, personally. But the word that stands out to me is destiny. And a lot of this movie kind of talks about like destiny. Well, it's my destiny to do this and yada, yada, yada. What does destiny mean to you, Dan? And how do you think it applies to Indiana Jones in this movie?
I mean, so one of the last things I do in the semester with my British literature seniors is I open up, I think it's chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And it's the sequence where Harry, it's the sorting hat. And they put the hat on him, and the hat has this conversation with Harry, you know, not Slytherin, hey, you could be great, you know, it's all there. And Harry says, not Slytherin, not Slytherin. Ultimately, he chooses Gryffindor. The rest is literature and cinematic history. So then I say to my students, did Harry get into Gryffindor because of free will? Because he chose it? Or does he get into Gryffindor because of destiny? Because it's meant to be. And so we go around the room and everybody has to talk. There's no opt out. And whatever they say, I say the opposite. Try to just, you know, and they get frustrated and they know me. So they know I've got a point and they're along for the ride. At the end, I say, well, what most people believe is something called soft destiny. Because ultimately, you know, what I say, this is in many ways, it's a religious thing. You know, is there a plan for your life? Yes, but you can still pick it. I think this is destiny because Indy could not be lower. He so much so that he goes into the past, which is ironic because he spent his whole life collecting things from the past, including his wife. And his father and things like that.
Yeah.
So ultimately he is meant to get to that point, but because he's Indiana Jones, it's not easy to do. It's very, very difficult to do. So, the destiny here for him is that ultimately he is going to get his archaeological groove back, his interior pilot light, his swagger, his clout, whatever you want to say. So at the end of the day, it's his destiny to ultimately be him. But I've heard a lot of people say this. I don't think at the end when he gets that hat back, he's running around on adventures. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still wear the hat and be Indiana Jones, but just be a good father. He's still a father, even though his son's passed away. But his destiny now is to just be with Marion. Obviously, she's been in 3 of the movies, and she's such an integral part of who he is, and she grounds him. And I think that is ultimately his destiny.
Yeah. I love what you're saying here, and for my 2 cents, and exactly, I think it aligns exactly with what you were saying here too, is that to me, destiny is a future thing, right? You're always running towards your destiny. It's not in the past, right? Your destiny is not in the past, right?
No.
That's where Indy, you know, maybe reluctantly sees that at the end once Helena punches him to go back to his timeline.
Yes.
But Jürgen Völler is like, I need to go back to 1939. That's where my destiny is. I need to change what happens in World War II. I'm the only one that can do it. I'm the one with foresight that can, you know, with these added 20 years in between, I know how to stop the Führer. I know how to, you know, all that stuff. And then Indy's like, yeah, maybe it's my destiny to be back in time. But no, your destiny is to be here right now. There's still more for you to do in this timeline, right? As you mentioned, mending that relationship with Marion, being there for Helena as godfather, right? Still being somewhat of a father. I mean, she doesn't have a father figure either. Teddy, you know, could benefit certainly from a father figure. Solace, his friend, and it seems like maybe they haven't chatted for a little while because he's introducing him to his grandkids.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, if that's your best friend and you live in the same town, like, maybe you should have coffee together every once in a while.
Yes.
Like, know what's going on in each other's life. Get ice cream, perhaps, as they do at the end of the movie. So I think it's just a fascinating thing of, like, you know, and even in Star Wars 2, right? It is your destiny, right? That's a future thing. It's not like it was your destiny. It's in the past. No, you're always striving to your next destiny, your newest destiny, whatever. I think you can have multiple destinies in your life, personally. I don't think that you just get one and that's it. always keep striving for something else. Do something different with your life. Do something better.
Agreed.
Try it a different way. So I think that's really interesting for, again, for a guy that spent so much of his time in the past. He's in the past, literally. And then he has to come to that realization at the end that maybe there is still more for me at this point in time. I think that's a great lesson to learn. And for all of us, too.
Yes.
Right? Like, some of us are probably stagnant sitting at home right now and thinking, man, I got nothing to look forward to right now. But you honestly, you probably do. You probably have so much to look forward to right now. I mean,
yes. I mislabeled it. It's soft determinism, not soft destiny. It's soft determinism. That's what most people believe. That's what I believe.
I'm with you on that one, too. And yeah. I had to do a paper in college basically saying to that same degree there that, it is laid out for you, but how you get to that end point is up to you to choose it.
Exactly.
Which I totally agree with as well. So let's talk about the MacGuffin of this movie.
Okay.
Archimedes' dial, the Antikythera, the Antikythera. It's said multiple different ways here. So A-T-A-T, AT-AT.
Yeah, there you go. Ooh, we've got an Indiana Jones version of the AT-AT conversation.
Exactly. How does it stand up against the others in this franchise, in your opinion? I mean, it's got a bunch of heavy hitters against it with the Cup of Christ and the Ark of the Covenant, to name a few. Where does it rank in your opinion right now?
Sure. I think, like the dial itself, it's cracked. It's broken in half. It doesn't work at all for me.
Okay.
I've never heard of it. Now, that doesn't mean it's not good. You know, a crystal skull I hadn't heard of either, but that worked. This works in the context of what we are given. I just don't find it particularly compelling, especially because in the beginning, we are led to believe initially, even though we know the title of the movie, that's going to be involved with the dagger that wounds Christ.
Oh, that the Spear of Destiny.
Yeah, that would have been infinitely more interesting. It would have been a nice sort of a bookend to the religious message of the Ark of the Covenant, which, is all in the Old Testament and Exodus and other books of the Bible as well. So that was disappointing because the spear would have been much, much more fascinating to me. So, yeah, it didn't work. I think I said this on the show. And I hope you'll go back and listen to it because I'd love your feedback.
Oh, I've got them all saved up in my queue because I want to go back and hear all the thoughts, of course,
fun.
Too.
Now, I said earlier that I have time travel fatigue. So I just sort of like, eh. But I me. I'm not interested in being a buzzkill. I'm just honest. But what do you think?
Appreciate the honesty. Yeah. I actually thought it was pretty cool. The look and feel of it overall. I can't wait for Disney to release a model of it so I can have it on display in my office.
You know they
right?
will.
I'm looking forward to it. Come on, let's do it, Disney. And again, I like the narrative idea of it personally. Like the idea you mentioned, it is broken, right? And indie is very much broken at this point
right.
in time. And for
nice
it to
metaphor.
Be mended together, it helps to push the narrative forward metaphorically, as you said. So it did work for me. I did like the twist of it too, that it only goes back to one point in time. So it's like Voller put all of his chips into this and defining the dial, right? He literally put a person on the moon just so he could get some free time to go hunt for the dial. Like, man, it's interesting that it's so mathematically based, right? It's so different compared to
right.
all the other ones. There aren't religious relics or the crystal skull is a whole different animal too in its own right, but it certainly is something that's a little bit based in history but still has this like mythical element of time travel to it too, which I thought was different in a good way for me, so I'll take it. I did love that you mentioned though the Holy Lance, the Spear of Destiny, Longinus's spear. I am a honestly, if we could do a podcast on the Spear of Destiny, I would do that because that's actually like my favorite historical relic, even before my love of Indiana Jones.
Oh, cool.
So as we saw that on screen there, even through the fog and mist of the pouring rain, I started geeking out to my wife, Elise. I was like, it's the Spear of Destiny. I was like, is it going to actually, because when I had thought that it might be a thing, right?
Right.
Dial of Destiny. I was like, maybe it like is a piece of it that becomes into this dial or something like that. Or maybe we just misunderstood what the Spear of Destiny actually is. I spent a lot of time studying that artifact and that device and the one that they showed in the movie is a replica of the one that's on display in Austria at the art museum there.
Cool.
So if any of our fans want to take a pilgrimage out to Austria to see the, it's a fake Spear of Destiny, because again, they alluded to it in the movie, but it is actually one that's, you know, only like 1,000 years old. So it's not the real Spear of Destiny, if one does exist. So
he even used it to pick a lock, which I thought was a really nice
exactly. Touch. He's like, it's a fake. It's not worth anything at this point. So I did appreciate that, and I will still geek out at future. I mean, I've seen it 3 times now, and I'm like, this is Spear of Destiny. I want that on a replica of that too. So Disney. I will pay handsomely for that.
Okay.
So let's talk about how this film plays as in the franchise, but transitioning, if you will, from Kingdom of the Crystal Skull to this final installment.
Sure.
And some time has passed since the ending of the Crystal Skull at the time of this, you know, 1969 when this film starts. And I know that you're actually a pretty big fan of the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, much like myself.
I love it.
But as we've already talked at length here, Indy's definitely in a different place at the start of this movie from where that one ends. So therefore, was the continuation of this story in the way it was presented satisfying to you, where we find Indy at in 1969 when he wakes up to the sounds of the Beatles? You know, do you think it addressed the outstanding questions of Marion and Mutt as well that many folks had coming into this?
I'm fine. I mean, that was the direction they were going. I want to point out that in one scene, I hear the Beatles, I see Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford, and he's wearing a Cubs shirt, although briefly.
Yes, backwards, so that, yes.
That's my love language, all of that. So that was fun. So I mean, the direction they wanted to go, the broken Indiana Jones is older and has lost his groove, I think it worked perfectly. It's pretty cool. I mean, he was in his late 70s when they filmed this. I think 78, mm-hmm. probably 79. And who wouldn't want to look as good at Harrison Ford at 80? Who wouldn't want to look that good right now?
Oh, let me tell
regardless of your age.
I was going to say, he looks better than I do. Yeah, so he deserved to have a shirtless scene.
Absolutely. I thought it was cool. I mean, you've never seen him like that. I mean, so much that Sal later tells us that he has the whip and the hat under his bed. I mean, you know, that's like, if this is like a symbol of, you know, fertility, you know, he's yeah. completely gone away from the things that kind of make him, he's sort of powerless for a while. And so this mm-hmm. is the perfect way to kind of show that.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to, the Marion and Mutt of it all, are you okay with them not including them to a large degree in this movie? Are you okay with the choice that they made for Mutt overall as a character?
I love Mutt.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I love mine. I Shia LaBeouf. I mean, let's not do revisionist history. Shia LaBeouf was about as big as it gets as an adolescent actor during that time period.
He was on top of the world.
He was great. And he had, you know, a lot of misfortune, unfortunate things have happened to him. He was great. I loved him as Mutt. I thought he was a perfect foil for Indiana Jones in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And we all knew he wasn't going to come back. There was a lot of, I don't really know all the history, but it's no secret that he kind of burned a lot of bridges.
He did, yep.
Which is too bad. But they couldn't just not address Indiana Jones having a son. I thought it was brilliant. And the two moments when they talk about him and Indy really talks about him, I got choked up. At the end, I actually cried.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was just really beautiful and brave. And would I have liked to see more Marion? You bet I would. Mm-hmm. Karen Allen is Marion Ravenwood. That's about as good as it gets. I will say, though, as much as I wish I could have seen her earlier, the punch of her showing up and the emotional, the pathos of that was really lovely and poignant. So I really thought that was great.
And to redo the great kissing sequence from Raiders again, just from the opposite perspective. I mean,
awesome.
I couldn't write a better ending for this movie.
No,
frankly.
That was really, that was kind of a nice little love letter to fans of Raiders.
Agreed. Now I love the way that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull ends. I love that they get married and it has that almost like happy fairy tale ending, of course. But, you know, when you think about it, at least when I think about it, it's almost hubris to think that there wouldn't be any like hiccups along the way, right?
Like, it wouldn't be Indiana Jones without hiccups.
It wouldn't be, exactly. I mean, this Mutt clearly states that he's like, I'm not going back to school. And then Indy is his father is now like, you're going back to school. Like, they just... it's not going to just be all hunky dory at the end of the day, right? How are you going to have a Tuesday night when you just want to like work on your motorcycles and your dad is the great Indiana Jones now, and he's on your case about all the stuff? Like, of course there would be some friction about that. And Marion, for what we know, raised Mutt as almost like a single mother for like, you know, 18, 19, 20 years. So the loss of him would be so devastating for her. I mean, I could only imagine the pain that she went through. And Indy being Indy, you know, still struggles a little bit with those human connections and relationships at time. I think that's why he tries to bury himself in the past so much.
Mm-hmm.
It just, that's what it made sense to me. Exactly. All the questions that I had going into this about those two characters, I found the result to be satisfying. And when Helena asked Indy, when she's like, what would you do if you could go back in time? What would you change? And he's still remorseful about, like, I would tell my son that he's going to die. Right. Like that. Mm-hmm. I started tearing up at that moment. I'm like, man, what a hard thing it would be to be the son of Indiana Jones too. Mm-hmm. Right. Like a person that has such, I mean, he was on an adventure with them, and I mean, he's almost like a soldier of fortune, right? No bullet. I mean, he gets hit by bullets, but he still keeps trucking. Right. Yep,
that's right.
And you think you're from that lineage and you've had this experience with him, you probably think you're invincible too. So you got to like keep the family line going, and he's probably going off to think he's going to have his own adventures, presumably in Vietnam, which we can assume based off of the timing.
I think so.
But it just turns out that even Indiana Jones, none of us are 100% bulletproof when it comes to things in the world. And it's just as a stark reality that is a thing that tears apart the family that hopefully at the end mends things together once Indy goes on this adventure and comes back to being himself. But that was, I think, probably the most thing I was anxious about in this movie is how they would address that. Being a Mutt fan like yourself, too. And I was
I love Mutt.
In my third viewing, I got to see in his office, he has a picture of Mutt. So I caught that little detail on my second viewing. And of course, all the pictures of Marion that he has around his house, I thought were just great touches to like keep us reminding, like, okay, he isn't, and he still has the wedding ring on too. Like, he isn't fully put aside his relationships and those that he cares about. He's still got a heart for them, which I found to be great. So let's talk about that de-aging sequence from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was spectacular. So I want to hear about your thoughts in this, how it played out. How did it feel to see prime Harrison Ford back on screen again for a little bit?
I think this is part of why I was conflicted. I mean, okay. Let's be clear. I thought it was brilliantly done. He had over 100 ILM creators. I actually interviewed someone from ILM last summer, and she was telling me about how she was working on it.
Amazing.
She didn't tell me anything about it. She said, I'm working on the Indiana Jones film. I was like, ooh, I wish I could look
over. Now you can put the dots together and what they were.
Right. The thing that took me away, I feel like, and you've seen it three times, I haven't, so maybe you can sort of shine the light on this for me. I feel like his voice was not de-aged.
You're correct on that.
And that threw me a lot. Plus, I think Harrison has such unique, soulful eyes to tell a story. And I feel like there are a few times, because they were quite brazen with the lighting, that sometimes you could tell that it wasn't Harrison's eyes. There are other times you completely could. I mean, it looked terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I can even draw a straight line with a ruler, so who are we kidding? but I thought it was cool. I thought it was a bit too long. And I feel like this would have been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to take a younger actor and tell us, hey, this is, like they did with River Phoenix and Crystal Skull. Hey, here's Indiana Jones. And then they could have taken that actor and parlayed that into to more of this franchise. Cause I don't want to be done with the story. I mean, the Harrison Ford stuff should be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, he said flat out at D23, I'm not falling down anymore for you people. So he's not going to. Right. But I think that would have been cool. But again, I'm not a fan who complains and gets upset if things don't happen the way I want, because give me a break. You don't want me telling this story. You want the talented Hollywood people telling the story. Just for me, I appreciate it. I need to see it again. But I had a hard time seeing past the illusion. Like I wasn't taken in like I wanted to be. And I'm not usually like that.
Sure. Hey, I mean, I only think in my opinion, there were about two or three sequences where I was like, okay, you know, like, it looks a little lifeless to me. But kudos to the ILM team for making like, what, 90%, 95% of this look really great compared to a lot of the CG stuff that we see in films these days. Like, to do a whole sequence of this, like, yes, 20, 30 minutes almost, is really, like, kudos to all of them.
Well, even the part when he's a little bit older and he's got gray hair and he's in Helena's father's office. I thought that looked
great. Yeah,
that was much more effective.
Yeah, I wonder if they just did makeup for that one rather than.
No, I don't think. I mean, there's footage of him that Lucasfilm has that Harrison Tarbert they used. I don't know how they did. Hopefully, there'll be like a Disney Plus behind the scenes feature.
Oh, I would eat that up.
That'd be great. Surely there will be. Hope.
Yeah, give me a 2-hour documentary. I mean, they've got it for all the other films. So you got to keep it consistent. So
I hope so.
Give me all the behind the scenes features. I especially want to see a Disney gallery like they did for Luke Skywalker and that changing process. I want to see how they almost perfected this technology. I mean, to think that we've come so far from even, Rogue One, 7 years ago at this point, for Tarkin and Leia to be all the way where we're at now. It's really astounding, and I appreciate that they took the risk, because this is a big risk to start this movie like this too.
Yes,
to reintroduce Indiana Jones to perhaps a whole new audience, or introduce and reintroduce to fans of the franchise before, and it has to feel like you have to believe that this is a prime Harrison Ford. I think I thought it was really a great job that they did all that. And again, the gusto for attempting to do this is really a left field swing for them.
It would have been even cooler. Oh, I am too. I think it would have been even cooler if that wasn't the trailer and I didn't know.
Sure. Oh my gosh.
That was an amazing, breathtaking moment. Like, oh my gosh, there he is and he's young.
You're right. Oh my goodness. I 100% agree with that.
I wish I didn't.
Could you imagine
not to watch trailers? I know.
You're so right. Yeah, I know. My wife does that. She like closes her eyes in the whole intro portion of going to the movie theater, which we go very often. So she's taking almost a little nap before the film even starts.
Yeah, I understand.
Wow. I agree with you there. I agree. That should have been the biggest surprise ever.
It would have been neat. It would have been really cool.
Oh man. Oh well.
If only we had a dial of destiny.
Yeah, I would say, if only we had a dial to go back in time with. well, this film actually also has like a ton of new characters in addition to the ones that came back previously from previous installments of Sala, Marianne, etc. So these include Helena Shaw, Basil Shaw, Teddy, Ronaldo, who's Antonio Banderas, we've talked about before, and of course the villain, Jürgen Völler. Did any of them stand out for you in this movie? Were any of them like big, fan favorites, if you will? Maybe not Völler, but did he stand out?
None of them particularly stood out to me except for Helena. I thought Helena was terrific. She was almost a scene stealer.
Yeah.
And the sequence where she walks around in the boat and she sort of unravels that mystery. And while she's carefully trying to get the cigarette to Indy so he can light the dynamite or vice versa, was a masterclass in performance. I really love. So to me, I didn't expect to love her as much as I did, but she was dynamite.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Helena was my big standout for sure too. I mean, not even including the great theme that John Williams wrote at the age of 90 for her. I mean, I've been literally playing that soundtrack for the last week now, and that Helena theme is just so magnificent. It's beautiful.
Awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah. I hope to perhaps see it live one day. Maybe they do a Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny with the orchestra performance. I would love to hear it in full glory. Yeah, I thought she was a great foil to Indy too. To keep him on his toes. She was one of those characters, kind of a femme fatale, but not necessarily in the femme fatale of the 40s and 50s. That's the term means, but. She was just kept her on your toes, right? You didn't know where she necessarily stood, but you could see the arc changing for her over time as she definitely gets back into the groove of like, okay, I'm with Indy in this. I believe in him. We're working in this together. I see the merit and good in him. He can certainly do a lot of good in his current time. Again, getting to that final sequence where she's like, stop being stupid. You're coming back to your time. Also, she's the one cognizant of the ramifications potentially of what time travel could do. Mm-hmm. If Indy stays back in time there and doesn't go back to his time, what does that do for the space time continuum? Right.
She's seen Endgame. She knows.
Exactly. She's seen Back to the Future.
Yes.
She knows what could happen. That's the ramifications. I thought she was just really astounding. Again, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, not a newcomer to Lucasfilm for sure with her role in Solo, A Star Wars Story, but her comedic bits were a welcome addition to this movie, which didn't really have a whole lot of comedy, I will say, compared to the other films.
No.
I think maybe that's just the tone of it overall, but she brought a nice comedic touch at times to this movie that I think was definitely needed.
I think that's where we see the biggest evidence of the absence of Steven Spielberg.
Mm.
I think that's why this is a challenge for me, because I feel like for all its many good qualities, it's not a ton of fun. And all of them, even Temple of Doom, which is incredibly dark.
Oh, yeah.
It's got some really fun, silly moments. And definitely Crystal Skull does.
Oh,
this really doesn't. And, and I feel like that's kind of an important ingredient. So like that's where, if anything, I missed Spielberg's presence.
Hmm. I think that's a fair point. That's a very valid critique of this movie. I've definitely noticed a lot more comedic bits, probably unintentional comedic bits, I will say, just by way of the actors just acting things out on screen. Mm-hmm. In my subsequent viewings, but my first time I was definitely like, yeah, it doesn't have that same, like, you know, Indy getting like whacked in the head bit from Raiders, and then Marion being like, did you say something?
Which yeah, exactly,
gets a belly laugh out of me every time, no matter how many times I've seen it. So I do think that was something that this film was missing to a degree, but to have Indy be the way he is, it may not have fit tonally wise. So it's one of those conflicting things that I can understand where you're coming from on that one.
Yeah.
So I want to talk action sequences, because again, this film is full of them. Mm-hmm. What would you say was your favorite action sequence and why?
It's a hard question. I actually enjoyed the escape from the parlor where Helena is trying to sell, you know, the dial. I like that part a lot. I feel like it was when he first meets her and their connection, I remember thinking, okay, now the movie's taking off for me, now this is really working for me. And it took me a while to get there, and I wish I didn't see the bit where he has the whip.
Yeah,
and it's neat, but then becomes ultimately ineffective because Indy is ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
And so I enjoyed that a lot. There are a lot of good moments, but that one was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I love the tuk-tuk sequence, the whole chase that follows after that too.
I saw that at Celebration, actually. They show that in the Lucasfilm panel thing. They said, we're going to show you a couple of minutes from Dal Desi. So that
The sequence they showed. Okay, I don't know why, but in my brain I thought it was the New York sequence with the horse, him running away on the horse and going through the subway.
Right.
But wow, that's really cool.
It's a big one. Yeah.
A big one. Yeah.
It's very action packed, very heavy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's so cool. For me, I actually thought that the whole sequence underwater with the eels was a really great bit of action, and also brought a bit of that horror and suspense, I think, a little bit of the other films touch into a little bit there. I thought the eels were just extra slimy and squirmy. And there's a point where he turns on the flare, an underwater flare, and you just see like all these eels just like gunning for him basically, and I'm like, how in the world is he gonna get out of this without being eaten alive? He's got 2 minutes to be underwater here. How does that work? And somehow Indy finds his way out of that, which I'm baffled at. And again, first time seeing it, I didn't actually see that sequence because
it was hard to see even when in a clear screen, because everything happens so quickly and it's dark.
Exactly. And you can imagine looking out basically through water again. You're just double water filter.
Oh, man. I'm glad you're able to retcon your experience, because that would be
absolutely fun. I got a large bucket of popcorn and a large soda to sit in for this experience. I was like, I'm reclaiming this first time again.
Yes. Good for you.
So that was a big one. I actually thought that the whole recreation of the Syracuse battle too was something that was so bonkers but cool at the same time, because I'm like, Wow, not only did they like have to create the whole set design and costumes for like Germans and Nazis and modern day 1970s, late 60s America, but they actually had to create Roman centurion soldier outfits too, and do the ships and the design for the spears and all of that. I'm just like, man, who would have thought that I'd get both World War II, basically 1970s action sequences and combat, and almost pre-medieval, bronze and steel age action sequences here. Just wow. What a journey. What a journey you go on in this
pretty
movie.
Amazing.
So this is my final question here, Dan. I thank you so much for coming on the show here, but you've talked a little bit about, you know, where this franchise goes next. And I think that's a fair question to ask. So where do you think the Indiana Jones franchise goes from here? Are there more stories to tell, or is this just a solid ending, a solid conclusion, if you will, to an incredible franchise?
I mean, you could tell stories of Indiana Jones every day. You know, there's so many. I mean, he's got a lot of connections. Even Temple of Doom, which is technically the first film on the calendar, that even before that, he's obviously an established hero. I mean, you could go a lot of places. I just think, this obviously is the last one with Harrison, and that's the way that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's older, and I think they have wrapped it up in a very unconventional bow, which is the way it should be for Indiana Jones. I would love to see. I've always thought an Indiana Jones animated thing in the style of Clone Wars or Rebels would be fantastic. A Disney Plus series would be great. I want more of the character. I hope that whatever they do with it, I hope they do something, because I think this is a wonderful character that I want to live on forever.
Exactly. I think you're 100% right. And my brain goes immediately to the animated sequences too, right? There's so many people that do great Harrison Ford impressions, vocal impressions. And there's so much ripe storytelling, I think, for World War II, right? We got to see a little bit of that spy stuff in this movie, and it's hinted at, of course, in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So there's a good 3-4 years that they could tap into of great storytelling they could tell animated wise, right? At least 4 seasons, 22 episodes each of different varying adventures fighting Nazis. Sign me up for that. I mean, golly, we could also do a slightly older young Indiana Jones series too, like kind of revive that
That'd
concept
be awesome.
A bit too, and see. Maybe how he becomes a bit more of the Indiana Jones that we come to know in Temple of Doom as the starting point here.
Right.
But I agree with you too. And I hope this is not the end of this character. I hope there are many more stories to tell. And if nothing else, I at least have great action figures now by which to play with and to create those stories myself.
Exactly.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. We'll, of course, have you back on many, many more times in the future as your schedule allows. But thanks for coming on and geeking out about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Of course, I think many of our fans know already where they can find you. But tell us about Coffee with Kenobi and where they can connect with you if they want to continue the conversation.
Yeah, well, Anthony, thank you so much for having me on the show. It was awesome to talk about Indiana Jones with you. And I love, as always, your passion and it just really comes through on the audio, but you know, actually being able to see the video portion is a fun part of this as well. You can find Coffee with Kenobi twice a week, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find the live show Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock PM Central Standard Time, both on Facebook and YouTube. I have, of course, social media presence with Coffee with Kenobi, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, Threads. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, MrZehr, and on Instagram and Threads as Dan Zehr, CWK. And then you can go to anywhere you find your favorite books, and you can find a couple of the books I have written about Star Wars. The Star Wars book, Star Wars Character Encyclopedia, and Star Wars, I Am Your Father.
Oh, yeah. Be sure to go pick up those books because they're wonderful reference books. And I'll be honest, Dan, I was such a proud brother-in-law that I really didn't even need to prompt my brother-in-law, who's went on his own Star Wars journey with this over the last couple of years. He's literally gone through episode 1 all the way through episode 9, including Clone Wars, Rebels, Resistance, everything in between there. When he watches Star Wars, he goes from all the way through. He doesn't differentiate movies or TV shows. He just give me it all. Tell me the story chronologically. And I walked into their house the one day and I saw just on the coffee table that they've got the Star Wars book.
Yes.
And the character encyclopedia. And I'm like, man, I salute you. I salute you. You're doing great. You're already set. I don't even need to you cut off that Padawan braid. You're set.
Well, that's cool. Well, tell them thank you. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And thank you to everybody at home for listening. It's been a pleasure and a blast talking about Indiana Jones over these last couple of weeks here. And of course, the stories and conversations will continue. So I think we'll probably be back next week to continue some of our deep dive discussions into the Dial of Destiny. Maybe I'll see it again for a fourth time. Who knows? The summer is now opening up to me now that grad school is over. So we will certainly see where the journey goes next. But until then, we'll be back in your podcast feeds very soon. May the Force be with you. Take care.